The news from Moscow, first the headlines.
There is strong international public interest in the interview given to the Pravda by President Leonid Brezhnev.
In Israel, Israeli Prime Minister Begin has ended 2 days of talks with President Sadat. There has been a protest demonstration in Brussels against American plans to produce neutron weapons. The Tosov and Kosmonauts continue their mission on board the Soviet Orbiting Space Laboratory.
In France, there was a terrorist attack on Sunday on the home of the General Secretary of the French Communist Party, Georges Marchais. The attack occurred at Saint-Martin, which is 100 kilometers from Paris. Several shots were fired at the house and a gun blast blew a hole in the front door. Nobody was hurt. A Communist Party statement on the attack blames it on right-wing extremists. The American Newsweek magazine feels that the capitalist world will not be able to resolve its economic problems in the new year. It predicts that all Western countries will still suffer from a high level of unemployment and inflation, and that the rate of economic growth will remain low. The magazine says the number of unemployed in the United States will remain about the present figure of around 7 million. The Newsweek expects a low rate of economic growth in West Germany, Britain, Italy, Belgium, Holland, and Sweden. Yuri Romanenko and Georgi Gretko today began their 16th day of work aboard the Salyut 6 orbital station. In the morning, the cosmonauts studied the growth of water plants in weightlessness. In the afternoon, they were to study our planet's surface jointly with a ground team of experts on environmental protection. The cosmonauts will report results of the work to the Flight Control Center for comparison with data obtained down on Earth. Last week, the crew discovered noctilucent clouds over the North Pole. The cosmonauts observed a fire in Australia in the region of Sydney and the increasing oil slick off Southern Africa, where two tankers collided. Observations from orbit can cover almost the entire globe in 24 hours.
Next, we have a tribute to Charlie Chaplin from Radio Moscow Observer, Vladimir Posner.
When the news of Charlie Chaplin's death was broadcast yesterday over TV, suddenly this image flashed before my mind's eye. The face of a man. He holds a flower by the stem between his teeth. I think it's a carnation. He smiles, but it's a smile of love saddened by pain, by the understanding of life's tragedy. And there are the eyes full of wisdom, of compassion, full of hope and grief and forgiveness. The last close-up from Chaplin's City Lights, it came back to me in that split second. Now he's no longer with us. The little tramp with the huge shoes, funny little cane, and grotesque mustache. The little Jewish barber and the dictator Hinkle, the suave Monsieur Verdoux, and all the others. All of them Chaplin from top to toe. Now he is no longer with us, and so there will be those who will come running with their ball points and ball portables to tell us, to write, to have filed away once and for all just exactly who and what he was, what that English gentleman called Charles Spencer Chaplin really stood for. Well, there's no reason to put this in the future tense. We are already being told that Chaplin was a comedian, a true Christian who stood for the underdog, for the little man, that he was a liberal, never alienated from his society. Yes, now is the time when an attempt will be made to canonize Chaplin and place him in a niche which he doggedly refused to accept during his lifetime. Beginning with the Gold Rush and going on through City Lights and Modern Times, the Little Tramp was a social comment. Funny, yes. The way Gogol is funny when he makes you laugh through invisible tears. Christian? Up to a point, as in The Great Dictator, when the little Jewish barber, disguised as the dictator Hinkle and expressing Chaplin sentiments, preaches to the world, and especially to fascist Germany, to repudiate the policy of brute force. The speech was Christian, but it didn't stop the lions from rending their victims in the arena into bloody screaming pieces of humanity. Hitler showed the world how much Christian pleas affected him, and Chaplin was always a quick learner. Do you recall Monsieur Verdoux, condemned to the chair and visited in death row by a priest who asks him, "What can I do for you, my son?" To which he replies, "And what can I do for you, father?" And if anybody had any doubts as to what Chaplin stood for, they could have looked back to his friendship and work with Sergei Eisenstein and his attitude toward the revolutionary art of the Soviet Union. And many years later, Chaplin's King in New York left no doubts as to where he stood. And HUAC, the House Un-American Committees, had no doubts, and good old George McCarthy had none. And neither did all those people who today are singing in harmony, our Chaplain, but who then howled that Charlie was red and said good riddance to bad rubbish when he left Hollywood and the United States forever because he refused to live in an atmosphere of oppression. Chaplin eluded those who wanted to put him in a certain framework in life, and he will continue to do so in death. Chaplin belongs to all of us, to humanity, one of the great geniuses of the 20th century whose comment on the human condition can never be remodeled or tailored to special demands, for that comment has the timeless and incorruptible quality of art's truth.
With that tribute to Charlie Chaplin, we end this edition of People and Events, Moscow.